Lois W. and the Pioneers, recorded June 25th, copyright 1982 by Al-Anon Family Group Headquarters, Incorporated. All rights reserved, including the right to reproduce this tape or any portion thereof.
I'm Margaret D. My husband was in the South Yonkers AA group, and in early February, or late February, 1952, the secretary of that group had met Lois at a retreat and had found that she was working. Nancy couldn't tell me what it was about. She said Lois and Ann were working on something to help families of alcoholics. And she said, you know, Margaret, God knows they need help of some sort. Most of them are half out of their minds. And I agreed with her. And she said, Lois has just moved into New York because she thinks there will be more volunteers available. And she gave me Lois's telephone number. And I said, I'm really looking for a professional job, but I'll volunteer until I find one. That, I think, is over 30 years ago, and I'm still in Al-Anon, although I've had two professional jobs since then. And the very next day I went in, it happened to be the day that they worked at the clearing, old clearinghouse, we called it then. Lois and Dorothy L. had to go to the national, it used to be National Committee on Alcoholism, was having its first annual luncheon, so that the only person in the 24th Street Clubhouse was Ann B. And I went and rang that bell at the green door, and she came down, and I said, I came to volunteer. And she said, what can you do? And I said, anything that has to be done, I would be glad to do. And she said, can you type? And I said, yes. And she said, can you type letters of your own? And I said, well, when I know what I'm talking about. And she said, we have typical questions and typical answers. And she said, almost all of them fit, but if you get in any trouble, just ask me about it. And so I said, all right, give me the letters. And at that time, I was in a thicker shell than any oyster you've ever met. And I sat down at a typewriter, and I read a letter, and then I read the answers and found the ones that fitted. And I typed out these answers. And then there were some cards, I think our record cards, they were kept in a shoebox, I think. And they were four or five different colors. White ones meant something. I think they were the original 87 groups that AA had made a record of. There were ones that were referred by something else. Well, it took two men and a boy to tell the yellow, the green ones from the blue ones, but we never threw them out because we paid 15 cents for that package of them, and we used them to the last one. And I sat there all day long typing, never saying a word. And when Lois came over after the luncheon, they read the letters and signed them so that I knew I hadn't made bad friends. We called it the family group then. It was much later, two or three years later, that we began to speak of Al-Anon. And by that time, of course, I had come out of my shell. I think they frequently wished I'd stayed in it because I got very chatty at that time. And I loved it, loved Lois, loved Ann, loved Dot. Irma used to come over after working at the intergroup, and the five of us would really put in a day's work And at the end, Lois always would look around and she'd, well, that was a good day's work. And I never was so happy anywhere else.
I'm Henrietta S. I first heard of Al-Anon about 2 years after Jack, my husband, came into AA. And when he first joined AA, he was very sensitive about going to a group near where we lived. So he chose to go to a group about 7 miles away, and I would accompany him to the open meetings. But about 18 months later, he decided to try something closer to home. So he joined the Bayside group, and it was at those meetings that I met women who told me about the Al-Anon, the need for volunteers at the Al-Anon clearinghouse in the old 24th Street clubhouse in New York. One of them in particular urged me to try to go in and volunteer. And I did, in fear. I had no confidence in myself, although I had some skills. I could write fairly well. I had taken accounting courses. I could type. But I just felt kind of like not very much of anything, because this is what the drinking years had done to me. So it took a lot of courage for me to go in, and it was not an easy trip. I live out in Long Island, but I did get in there on a Tuesday, and from the minute I walked in to the door, I felt at home. By that time, and this was early 1953, there were approximately 7 or 8 people working at the office. Dot L was there, but Margaret was not. She had a full-time job by then. And Ann B, Lois, Evelyn, and Irma, too, was not a regular volunteer at that time. I guess she was working at AA Intergroup. In any case, I offered to do anything I could and came regularly on Tuesdays. With one interruption, my son was due to go to college that fall, and we drove him out to Idaho, where he went. So there was a 3-week lapse of my coming in, and perhaps they thought I wasn't coming back, and one day Ann B. called me and said, are you still going to come back? I said, I think I will, and I did. Much to my surprise, that November, I think it was, I was asked to become the first part-time paid worker. I really had no idea that there was money available to pay anybody, and really very pleased that they would think me capable of handling the work that was there at that time. My munificent salary was $35 a week. And that was for 3 full days a week. As I said, I lived out in Long Island, and even in those days, it was a little more than car fare and lunch money, but that was not the point. It was something that brought me out of myself and forced me to mingle again with people, taught me a lot of courage, which I had lost completely. By the time Jack came into AA, I could not hold a telephone conversation because I hated the thought of it possibly being another bill collector on the phone. I overcame that and many other phobias and learned to love the people with whom I was associated.
Henrietta overcame a lot of things. I don't think Lois ever did a smarter thing in all of the smart things she's done that was smarter than getting Lois, getting Henrietta to take that job.
Thank you,
because
Margaret.
It really was something in those days. It really was a backbreaker.
And I'm Lois W.
Lois
Can you tell us a little bit about what the clearinghouse was?
Yes. It really started here in this house with Ann and myself. I'm so sorry. There are us three here, but Ann, of course, was one of the very earliest ones. I'm so sorry she isn't with us today, but she's in California, and it's too far to come for her. So, but I'm sure she would have liked to be here, to have been here, and I'm sure she would have been very, very helpful, because she was really the first volunteer that we had besides myself. And as I say, we started here using the 87 names that AA had received from these groups. And we wrote to them, and 50 of them responded. So Al-Anon really started with 50 groups. And Ann and I were very busy. We wrote them about the name. We wrote them about all questions of policy and whether they wanted to have the same program as AA. And the name Al-Anon Family Groups was unanimously, I believe, responded to. So Ann and I were very busy here for a while, and we got... There was so much to do that we thought we should get more volunteers, but this wasn't a very central place that we ought to move to New York, where we could get more volunteers easily. And there was a man by the name of Wally, whose son was an alcoholic, and he was in Al-Anon, and he was trying to, he was in the family groups, I better say, and he wanted to get his son into AA very badly, and he offered to take Ann and me around and visit the local groups and tell them how much we needed volunteers. We'd visit the groups, and we got quite a few volunteers in that way, down at the Al-Anon office. And the AAs cooperated very kindly because they had a clubhouse on West 24th Street. And they offered the use of an upstairs room to us. And that's why we moved to New York. I mean, that's where we moved to New York. This one had been originally a stable, and it was back from the road. It was a very large stable, and the building was two stories with a big room and a kitchen downstairs, and a big room and two small bedrooms upstairs and a bathroom and skylights. And the Illustrators Club had made this over for their own use. That's why the skylights, I guess, were put in. So it was a big, commodious room. It was a very nice room to work in. And there was already a mimeograph machine there. I don't know where it came from. But it was in very bad order and neat, and everybody got all covered with ink.
Also, it was the hottest place in the world, yes. And I could always stand something if I could give it a bad name. And so I called it Lois's Sweatshop, because in the summer, the sun beat down, I think it was a tin roof, and we literally drip dried as we worked in that place through July and August. You know what New York heat can be. And Lois put up with it.
There wasn't enough heat. It was always cold in the winter.
Right.
So we had the same trouble in reverse in the wintertime that we had in the summertime. Never was the right temperature.
It was changed then to Lois's refrigerator.
It was a lovely place. I don't know whether I should say this, but it was also infested with roaches. Mice.
And rats and mice.
But that didn't matter because we all loved working there.
Anybody would love working with Lois.
Oh, my. You opened the door and walked down this long corridor, and above they had a plaque reading the last mile.
Yeah.
And I recall many times walking into that building alone after I was employed. I had to open up and walk in, and I'd look at that sign and I'd wonder, is it really going to be my last mile? It was a little frightening to be there alone. And some days I was there alone all day. But most times, after I started working 3 days a week, we would try to schedule volunteers to come in and be with me. But they were never there first. Lois and Ann would usually come in on Tuesdays. Now, when I started working, there were 3 days of the week that we were there, and we would try to get volunteers to come in on the other 2 days, two or three at a time. There was a group in Essex County, New Jersey, that used to send in a volunteer every week. Four different women rotated their volunteer duty. And I remember Eleanor A., who was later a member of the Board of Trustees. I remember Jean B., who for a long time handled our literature review as we expanded literature, and who later became AA.
Yes, she later joined AA.
Right, but at that time she was Al-Anon.
Mad came in sometimes.
Mad.
Oh, those New Jersey volunteers were wonderful.
And Wanda.
Oh, yes, Wanda was perfect.
I was reviewing the early minutes that we had, that I have some of at home, and I realized that Wanda was our first chairman of publicity, we called it then. Now it's public information. Later, Wanda became our first chairman of Aladdin.
Yeah.
And she was an invaluable volunteer, as most of them were. Lois mentioned the mimeograph machine. We really had fun with that. I had some office skills, but I'd never run a mimeograph machine. Neither had Evelyn. Dot knew a little bit about it. And did we ever get full of ink when we ran off the early forms?
Yeah. And the way it wasted paper, sheets, reams of it would go through, and there would be three lines at the bottom of a page, which meant you couldn't use it. And money was terribly important. Postage was 2 and 3 cents a letter. But we sometimes, if we had a lot of letters, wondered if we had enough stamps to put on them.
We saved in every possible way.
Oh.
I used to bring in bills, cardboards that came in the shirts when we sent them out to be laundered. They were used to help package the literature that we sent out. This was a little later when we had literature to send out.
In the beginning,
yes.
Anne and Lois made do with 2 pieces. That was all they had. They didn't, in the beginning, didn't even have letterheads. They typed in the whole thing, which was a 2 or 3 minute job in itself, just to put a heading on it. They worked like dogs. I've never known such devotion.
And of course, we never knew about the money, how much was going to come in. It was all volunteer. Everything was donations. There wasn't any regular fee of any sort except for literature, which we did sell at a given price all the time. But the donations were very hard to figure, you know, how much you're going to have to do this or that or the other thing. But it all seemed to work out in the end. All came through. We didn't get too badly in debt.
But
anyway.
Lois, do you remember we did have, we were awfully poor, but we had our pride. We would not, AA would have given us all every day of the week rent-free, but we were trying to follow the steps and the traditions, and so one way or another, we would eke out $5 for a month, and then we would get it to $10 a month.
For the rent of the
It was.
Place.
We did pay our way from the very beginning.
Yes.
And Larry used to be so embarrassed because he'd say, you know, we didn't want you to pay. But then we said we were living the traditions and he had to take it.
Margaret mentioned Larry. He was the manager of the clubhouse.
Do you remember the day we came in? Larry adored Bill, of course, and Lois. And Bill used to go to the AA board meetings, and then if it happened to be a terribly late one, he would go over to the clubhouse, and he would stay in one of these two rooms. One of them had a cot in it, and a bureau, and I think a coat rack. Maybe there was a chair, too. But we came in one day, and there, across the doorway, was a velvet chain, a chain covered with red velvet, the way you see in museums. Lois took one look at it. She said, my heavens, Bill will lose his mind if he sees that.
I remember hearing a story about the first piece of literature that you ever ordered. Okay, I'd love to know what it was and how many you ordered.
One Life Story. That was what
that was.
One Life Story. And I think we got 1,000. And we were very scared that we'd over ordered, that we wouldn't sell them, and that we'd have a big, pretty bill. But they sold, but we had to reorder.
The other piece, I think, was the one from that Cleveland meeting when AA had their conference. There was some mention of family groups, and it was a little one piece, not any bigger than that. And those two were all that you had.
I don't know, there's something like 10 or 11 groups around County Jersey and Long Island and Westchester. The groups of families of the alcoholics. I was really surprised that there were so many groups.
By that time I had a job, so I was always late for meetings. And Lois interrupted the meeting and turned to me and said, Margaret, Henrietta has found that if she writes what we called it, the newsletter then, Lois had done it for 2 years, but then Henrietta was going to do it when she became an employee. And she found that if she did that, she didn't have time to do the letters, which were very important. And so Lois said, we've decided that you could write the newsletter. And I've always thought that you said yes in Al-Anon, that was part of the bond. And so I didn't even hesitate a minute. I said, I'd love to. And I did it for the next 20 years. And if you're interested in finances, at that time, it used to take me quite a while to do it because I wanted to put as much in as I could, as many letters and whatnot, and as many helpful things. And I think for 3 years, I produced it for $30 a month. And I used to think they were the 30 pieces of silver because I figured that it was 12-step work. And it turned out to be the most marvelous thing that ever happened to me, because people did write in
And they did tell what their problems were, what their group problems were. And always I knew that Lois and Anne, or Lois and Henrietta, Lois and Alice were going to read it, so that I couldn't possibly make bad friends for Al-Anon. I knew that wasn't my job. And I would be perfectly safe in saying what I really thought. And I did make wonderful friends through it. I felt that anywhere I went on this globe, there would be an Al-Anon group that would be friendly. And of course, I don't know an Al-Anon group that isn't friendly.
After Margaret undertook to write The Forum, it was, the name of the monthly publication was changed to The Forum.
Yeah.
And the procedure would be, I would gather any interesting letters that came in. Margaret would come in once a month to pick them up, or else I would mail them to her. And then after she had written her copy, it would be sent to Lois and myself to review. Very rarely did anything need changing. And then I would stencil The Forum, and we would try to run it off on this broken down mimeograph machine, which we managed to do. For this procedure lasted about 2 or 3 years before we went into print.
Oh, yeah. At least that. It first was one page, and then I couldn't get everything in, and I begged for a second page, and I got it. And then finally it went to offset.
Right.
And it was fun. I began in June of 54. And finished in June of 74. And now, of course, it's the beautiful thing that it is. Far more beautiful than anything I ever turned out. But I think that Hildegard is doing such a beautiful job that I should stay in the background.
I might add at this point that, or perhaps I said it before, that I worked at the office as the loan paid staff member for about a year and a half. And then two people were added to the staff because we were about to publish our first book, which was then called The Al-Anon Family Groups. It has since been renamed and expanded to be called Living with an Alcoholic. But this book was introduced at the convention in St. Louis in 1955. And by the end of the year, we had sold something a little bit under 4,000 copies. And the original print order had been for 5,000, so we had to reorder very quickly. We have published 4 other books since then. Margaret's, of course, favorite form, editorials, ODAT, which is One Day at a Time.
I was going to ask that question. Who wrote the ODAT?
Alice V. She would say that she was a channel, but basically she did a lot of the writing.
It's an extraordinary book, The ODAT.
It is. It is truly a bestseller. It still continues to be and has sold over 1 million copies by this time. I think we hit that target about 2 years ago. And it's used not only by Al-Anon groups. I know many AAs buy it, and other self-help groups use it. I must say that the thing about Al-Anon that has most enriched my life has been the development of the program overseas and in foreign language areas. I think we have groups now in 76 or 78 countries throughout the world.
And how many Al-Anon groups are there?
Well, I don't know if we said
around 20,000.
How many?
20,000.
That includes the Alateens.
Yeah. Well, they're Al-Anon, really.
And when did Alateen get started?
Do you know its history, Lois? I mean, do you recall it was started by a young...
Yes, it was... You tell about it. I remember
a young teenager whose father was in AA out in California. And they agreed to let the Al-Anon groups handle the organizational affairs of Alateen because it really... They were relatives of alcoholics.
And this young boy wanted some place to go that he wouldn't be just under his parents' wing all the time. He wanted to, with his age pals, same age pals, he wanted to be able to get together and, with them and talk. So he really founded it in California, this young man.
There's an Alateen ODAT underway. It should be published within a year. It is the experiences of the Alateens that various Alateen members have sent in over the past 2 years. And the project has been undertaken by someone outside the office who himself was an Alateen member. He's in Canada, and he has undertaken the compilation and writing of this Alateen One Day at a Time book.
We really grew in a remarkably fast way because AA had taken so very long to get started. And then in a few years, we were catching up and trailing just behind. So from the structural standpoint, Al-Anon is really just a duplicate of AA in its structure. But of course it has to take different attitudes in their different situations.
Bill always said at picnics and other times that someday Al-Anon would be bigger because there were more non-alcoholics than alcoholics. And he welcomed it. He was our staunchest friend.
Yes, he
was. Oh, Al-Anon never could repay what AA and particularly Bill did in helping us. I can remember now one time, I think it was after I'd been doing the forum for a couple of years, I don't know what possessed me, but I saw a figure, 12,977 or something like that, and the 2 or 3 years before, that had been the sum total of the forum mailed out, free groups and subscriptions. And in 1 month of 2 years later, that figure was so close that it was maybe 100 or 200 copies short of what had gone out 2 years previously. And that really startled me. But when I come back now and I see that office, I feel exactly the way Rip Van Winkle must have felt. I think it's not possible. This is what it came from, this much, and now it's all over the world. And I just don't believe it. But I do take time to thank God that I had a small part in it, thanks to Lois.
Well, I certainly could never have dreamed that it would grow like this. I think if I had, I would have been too afraid to tackle a first aid job. It reminds me that in 1957, we outgrew the 24th Street Clubhouse space and decided to take a big step forward and actually rent a real office, which was located at 125 East 23rd Street. And before too long, that became too small, so we moved to 115 East 23rd Street. And Then that became too small, so we took a second floor with a dumbwaiter going up and down.
This was just within 2 or 3 years of each other. It was very fast.
And finally, in 1978, just right after I retired, we moved into our present office, which is really very lovely.
But the thing of it was that growth, it was so important. In the beginning, somebody from Nebraska or up in Minnesota would write, and it would be some poor desperate person, man or woman. They would write in desperation, and we would look up in the atlas to find the nearest group. And if it was within 400 miles, we would be happy to tell them. Well, then in a few years, somebody would be within 200 miles of a group. And you couldn't help but be grateful that getting in touch was so much easier that way. And now, I don't know, I think almost this whole country over, you can get an Al-Anon group with a very reasonably short distance.
And people used to travel, though.
Oh, yes.
In those old days, they used to travel tremendous distances to go to a meeting.
Yeah.
They really wanted a meeting.
They do. It shows the power of Al-Anon.
I really expected Al-Anon to grow.
Well, I'd like to add to that that although we have beautiful new premises, they are very much utilized now because we've maintained the policy of encouraging volunteers to help and are still very dependent on our volunteers to help. Most of them now are assigned to specific committees. They no longer come in and do the kind of thing they used to do years ago, which was fold forms and stuff envelopes and possibly stamp envelopes and help with the typing. Now all of that is pretty much done by machines or paid stenographic help. They work on such things as a literature committee, the forum committee, public information committee. We have a great many committees. Among our early volunteers, we had a Mimi H. She was Mexican-born but educated in the States, lived in New York, and used to come in, and she was our first chairman of the Spanish committee, and she did all our translations of the Spanish correspondence, and I would draft the letters that she would translate back in reply.
I think it was in 1960 that we that there was an international conference of delegates of AA that went to California, and we had a conference out there, and I remember the wives all meeting together, or the spouses, because there were some men there then, of the AAs all meeting together, and I asking them what they thought of having a conference for Al-Anon, conference of delegates, and they were all very, very enthusiastic.
It was AA's convention that we were invited to participate. Al-Anon was invited to participate, and we had a regular scheduled program at that convention. All the Al-Anons from all over the United States and Canada took part in the programs. But you had done so much work before that time in drawing up a tentative plan for Al-Anon's own conference. You even had suggestions as to how the continent could be divided to provide for
I remember that
a panel of the original first delegates that came to our first conference in 1961. There were 12 delegates. Continent was divided into four quadrants. And from each quadrant were selected the areas with the most Al-Anon groups, three from each quadrant from which a delegate was elected to come to the first conference. The second conference in 62 had 24 delegates. The third one had 36, and our present conference numbers 67 delegates.
So it basically was to ensure that everyone throughout Al-Anon would participate
in... There's no authority in either AA or Al-Anon except God. That the groups can manage their own affairs on an international scale as well as a group scale.
We were always reaching out to get more people concerned and vitally interested in how it was to work and what it was to aim at.
There's never anything that's just a personal, one personal achievement. Everything that was done was always considered by other people, sent to groups of people and others, the advice and the approval.
Yeah.
But never we had no one-man shows at all.
There was nothing in our mind worse than a Mrs. Al-Anon group.
And at present, and ever since the conference was established, we are committed to every committee in the office reports annually to the conference, as well as to every group throughout the world. A conference summary is written up so that every group has the opportunity to read about what has taken place in the course of a year. Any group that wishes may get a complete financial statement sent to it. Any major decisions that are made are done by the conference.
In the beginning, we used to have a meeting if we finished work at 3 o'clock. We would have a meeting and would plan what we were going to do next if that mimeograph that Henrietta loves so much, that machine... I think we must have argued an hour whether it would be worth spending $50 to have it put in order. Well, in 2 weeks we would save that in wasted paper, but we would decide things like that. Then as Al-Anon grew, we figured there were things like the name, whether we would adopt the traditions, whether we would do this or that. And we felt that more people should work or contribute to those discussions. And so then we had an advisory committee. Then we expanded that, and we had to incorporate on account of fiscal responsibility and whatnot. And finally, we figured that the conference could be the watchguard, that would be really representative and not just a little handful or two hands full of people in Manhattan.
We have developed a World Service handbook. Lois worked very hard on the original one, and there have been slight amendments made from year to year. And this describes very specifically how the group conscience reaches the World Service office. Each group is supposed to elect a group representative which reports to district meetings and area committee meetings. These delegates are elected from among the GRs. One GR of each state or province becomes a delegate to the World Service Conference in New York. They have local meetings at which a GR can express any opinion that may eventually reach the conference. And a new development that is on a trial basis now is a World Service meeting, which is, the first one was held in New Orleans, and these are delegates from overseas countries that have an established Al-Anon structure. We're having our second such meeting in September of this year, and there will be about 18 countries represented at that. That will be in New York City.
So other offices, central offices for their area in various countries in Europe, mostly in Europe and South America, something, have these central offices, which are just as important to their area as the New York central office is to the American continent.
And I don't know how many languages we have translated our material into. The latest request, and I was in the office the other day, came for approval of the translation of our Living with an Alcoholic into Papiamento. I have also been very fortunate in my Al-Anon experience in visiting some of these places where I formed such friendship over the seas. Most recently, I went to the first Al-Anon convention in the UK and ERA. That was a year ago, March. Insofar as support, the money that goes into the basket may or may not reach the World Service Office in support. They have their own meeting place expenses to take care of, their area and district expenses to take care of. So we have a triannual appeal from the World Service Office. The letter goes out 3 times a year specifically asking for support from the membership for our services. And in this we differ from AA in that our appeal letter does go to all overseas areas just once a year, not 3 times a year, and they do support very handsomely. AA does not expect this support. For some reason or other, they feel all the money in the UK should stay in the UK. We have been very liberal in giving to our overseas areas reprint permissions. Without cost to them, they have the right to reprint any of our literature in their own language. And this is the way they help to support themselves. The overseas groups, too, have been very liberal in extending invitations to members of the staff and to Lois on many occasions and will underwrite all expenses of the trips that are taken to their countries. I mentioned having to go on to the first Al-Anon convention in the UK in ERA in March, and with Sandy on to Norway. I also went to the first Al-Anon convention in Argentina 3 years ago, and they paid all my expenses. And at that time, I visited 5 other countries in Central and South America. Lois has been to Mexico. I've been to Mexico.
Hildegard went to Finland.
And Hildegard went to Finland.
I was going with her, but was sick and couldn't go.
So there is a great need on their part to also feel that they are part of us, part of Worldwide Al-Anon. I will say for Al-Anon, it's a refreshing place to be in the sense that there is no gossip, or if there is, I have always closed my ears to it from day one. And it's a great human leveler in that it doesn't matter what your background was, how much money you have.
The outside world seems dull. The people that aren't in AA or Al-Anon lack something. You don't know just what it is, but you're always glad to get back with people that have this something, whatever it is.
My personal life lately has been rather rugged. My husband died 5 weeks ago, and I would rather not have come up, but I had said in March that I would, so I came. But I think things will be better from now on. We were very happy. it took him a long time to be successful in AA, but he always liked Al-Anon. We always shared everything. He came to me with meetings. I went to him with meetings. And AA and Al-Anon, I think, were the greatest parts of our lives, at least since we were adult. What have you been doing, Henrietta?
I haven't really retired in the full sense of the word.
You're just working without pay.
Thank you, Lois. No.
I live upstate so that I'm no longer available to the office. But when I did get a regular job, I had told Lois that I would stay until I got a regular job all those 100 years ago. And when I did get the regular job, I said, please, I want to stay connected with Al-Anon, and I'm going to come back to meetings and be part of it, that much a part of it, and contribute where I could. And I've done that.
I'm going to confess here that when I had to retire, I was absolutely devastated. In a state of shock for 6 months after retirement, until I was called back to be a volunteer on the Board of Trustees, as chairman of the Budget Committee, as treasurer, as a member of the International Coordination Committee, as helper on this and that and the other, and now I feel very happy and contented again.
I see you're very retired.
You can't retire from Al-Anon. Even up country, I can't retire. And I don't want to retire.
I, too, have had a very difficult last 2 years. I have a daughter who is chronically ill and with something quite serious. And this is a wonderful outlet that I can still be involved and useful and have a reason for getting away from her. Not that I want to get away from her, but if we were together all the time, it would be disaster. So it has been a godsend from that perspective, as well as the program itself, living a day at a time, first things first, easy does it, let go and let God. Every one of the little slogans helps. What do you do with yourself?
Well, of course, as both Margaret and Henrietta have suggested, that you, once you're an Al-Anon, RAA, you just stay in it forever because there's nothing else that takes its place. So I still do what I can, and I don't go to too many AA meetings or Al-Anon meetings, but I do go around occasionally to conventions and to gatherings, conferences, large gatherings of people. But I'm planning to leave this house to AA and Al-Anon. A foundation has been formed called the Stepping Stones Foundation, which is to have the house after I go available for either AA or Al-Anon or both, for seminars or for whatever use they find. So that in my garden has been what I've been interested in lately.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're still keeping busy, because we need you. We need, and I thank you. I particularly thank you, Margaret and Henrietta, for coming and sharing and giving us what we badly need, which is a perspective on what our background is and
where we go from here is where you made it go, what you built. With infinite wisdom, you're very, very magnificent ladies, all three of you. Thank you.
Well, old timers have their value. But really, it is startling what a newcomer can sometimes say at a meeting that really rocks you back on your heels. Without newcomers, we wouldn't be here. I think they're a breed apart.